This is Moments with Foo with James Foo Torres, better known as Foo, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and relevant people on the planet, hear their stories, and get the most important business lessons they have learned on their road to success, and get exclusive advice on how to implement their success into your life and business. Moments with Foo is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board and your host, Foo.
Hello and welcome to Moments with Foo. I'm your host, James Foo Torres, with Kung Fu, hence the name of the show. Today I have Michael Perez, or Mikey Perez, like I'll call him. And this guy, I'm of many talents. I mean, he has magazines, he does SEO, he does websites. I mean, what doesn't this guy do? Now, in his podcast, we're going to be talking about hair loss, hair growth, treatments, myths, facts, all that, and he's a returning guest that we were talking about completely different things, but I'm happy to have you here. So before getting into things, Mikey, how are you?
I'm so good, brother. It's so good to have you, to be back on your show, to be talking to you. And yeah, the stuff we talk about is just wild. We'll talk about tech, we'll talk about news, and we'll talk about hair. So let's do it.
I love it. I love it. Let's kick it up with a quick introduction about yourself and whatever you're focusing on right now.
and I'll tie in where I'll kind of, it might be a little confusing because James and I have been friends for a long time. You and I have been friends, and if you understand the bigger picture, kind of all these conversations have a common denominator. So I initially started in the tech world. I graduated in math and computer science, so I've just been coding, developing apps. And then I got into the news space. So I've been building news publications, doing some notable works in terms of search engine optimization. And this is all, so I founded a handful of companies, and they're kind of, they work in isolation, but at times they also work cohesively together to provide an all-encompassing service to those who need our services. And it's part of my first five-year plan. So I plan to segue and leverage the startups that I'm building now to head into VC. And my next five-year plan would be to study human aging. So that's ultimately where the end goal is. And so I'm currently doing biomedical engineering, studying online, and you know, from tech, it's all a leverage point to where I can work with founders who are doing some incredible engineering and innovative problem solving. And then from there, I'm hopefully going to fall in love with a particular company that's working on the biological processes of aging, and then I want to invest myself there. So that's kind of how all these conversations tie in.
I love this. And that's exactly, I mean, I wouldn't say exactly, but very, very, very similar than my focus. Instead of the tech side, which I love getting into the weeds of the tech and being knowing about the latest technology, being up to date with tech, and thankfully I have friends like Mikey here that help me stay up to date with things and other friends. I'm also very big into the self-development, the anti-aging, like being as healthy and as productive, as efficient as possible for as long as possible. So that's why, you know, I'm 30 years old. As you can tell, like, I'm not really losing, like, a whole lot of hair, maybe.
Man, you look great. You look great, yeah.
But I want to have a beard. I want to have more hair. I want to be young and good-looking for as long as I can and feeling good. So that's why I love talking about this topic.
Yeah, so you really want to, this is a very interesting conversation because it's this, the conversation or the passion that I have is not necessarily about eating healthier. It's not about living for a little longer. It's about understanding the underlying mechanisms to what cause cells to age, to lose their function, to become senescent or cancerous, and learning how to look at aging as a biological clock and ultimately look at aging as a disease. And, you know, before we head into the specifics of hair loss, it's kind of hard to predict where our focuses are going because we've evolved to rationalize death. We've evolved to see the beauty in death. And that was the best way to cope with the process, is to find the beauty in it, given, you know, our limited ability to do something about it. No one has escaped death. Everyone who's born has died, except for the people who are currently living. But I do think that as we technologically advance and as the pace of technological growth is exponential, certain conversations that we've evolved to pacify should resurface, and we should have serious considerations. We shouldn't see death as beautiful. We should see death as a disease. In fact, some biologists or some scientists call death telomere shortening disease. You know, that's one way to look at aging, as the shortening of the telomeres and the loss of cellular information or the loss of cellular function over time. But, you know, the question, you know, we are also, as technology evolves, we're passing the baton of life, of what it means to be alive, from biology to technology. And we're coming to realize that if you study a bird and you look at it abstractly, you can create materials that don't allow you to get from one street to another, or even from one continent to another. You can create materials that allow you to get from one planet to another. And this is certainly how I think we're going to start viewing our own body. And I know this almost sounds like science fiction, cyborgism, but we're quickly starting to realize that our heart is not necessarily the best material to keep us alive. In fact, it's the least ideal material dictated by evolution. And if we can make something that's fault tolerant, that works really well, that can deal with all sorts of problems, in fact, we're going to start realizing that all of our body parts are not ideal for keeping us alive. And then we start heading into the philosophical world of what does it mean to be you, right? We thought it was your heart. Now we think it's your mind. But when you isolate the mind, and you, let's just say, you know, you can break up the brain into compartments. If you were to incapacitate the prefrontal cortex, would you still be you? We'd all say yes. The amygdala, we would all say yes. And you go through every one of those compartments, it still gets a little philosophical of what consciousness is, who we are. These are really simple questions with really hard answers. But I think once we do answer those questions, the idea of what it means to be alive, the idea of how to live forever becomes something that's a lot more tangible. Now, that's a little bit of an esoteric philosophical conversation, but pulling it down here is the surface level of dermatology and the implications of aging are things we try to avoid. And hair is certainly one of them. I think it's a $3 billion industry. And it's almost a taboo subject as well, at least for men, to discuss hair loss, whether it's androgenetic alopecia, whether it's alopecia areata, universalis, totalis. These are all different forms of hair loss. But I think we're here today to discuss about just male pattern hair loss, like just guys getting older and losing their hair and what they can do about it. Are we on the same page?
Yes, yes. And there, just to give a little bit of context to people, this conversation started because I decided that I wanted to grow a beard because right. I saw Ryan Pineda, a big real estate influencer, that he had like Filipino less hair than me, like he didn't even have this, and you know, he tried a bunch of things, and then he said that he broke it down to biotin and some like taking biotin through the mouth and then doing minoxidil. So then I bought that and I started doing it. Then Mike here like texted me with a lot of stuff and
oh, bullshit, like, red flag.
Yeah. And then, you know, I've been doing it for a month now. I don't know what to think about it, but we're trying whatever.
Well, here we are. Hopefully we can get a little closer to the right direction. So first of all, I want to say is, you know, Ryan Pineda, I'm sure he's a great guy. I don't know, you know, and I'm sure he's well-intentioned as well. And in the broader sense in the industry, 95% of the stuff you're told is complete and utter bullshit. It's a snake oil industry. It's a scamming industry. It's a horrible place to be. And especially people who are generally looking to solve, you know, hair loss, instead of being told to shave their head, instead of being told to walk it off, to toughen up, or instead of being told to do some stupid things that don't actually work, there are a few things that really do work. I'm happy to discuss the underlying mechanisms first and foremost of how hair loss happens, and then we can discuss what medications work, what medications are FDA approved, and really there's, especially now more than ever, there seems to be a lot at your disposal with some interesting technologies also ahead. And apparently in the research industry, every cure is only 5 years ahead, and they've been saying that for like 50 years, but there actually are some pretty good stuff. So do you want to dive right into the process of how hair loss works, at least androgenetic based?
Definitely, let's get into it.
Yeah. So we have androgen receptors. So you have testosterone in your blood, and it's called free flow testosterone. And this testosterone gets picked up by enzymes, which convert to proteins. proteins. Now you have three enzymes. You have three enzymes that pick up your free flow testosterone. You have an enzyme called alpha A reductase. You have an enzyme called alpha B reductase, and you have an enzyme called aromatase. So alpha A and alpha B reductase will convert your DHT, your testosterone to DHT, dehydrotestosterone. And then your aromatase enzyme will convert your testosterone into estradiol, which is estrogen. That's as simple as in terms of the underlying mechanisms, that's what happens. You have testosterone flowing in your blood, some of us more than others, and as you grow older, that testosterone increases. And then you produce DHT from two enzymes, and you produce... decreases. Decreases, okay, you're 100% right.
I see all these people getting in treatments and things as they grow older.
Sorry. Your testosterone decreases, but your hair loss does mature, and we can talk about why. So you have those three enzymes, and your estrogen is needed, your DHT is needed, especially for like puberty and maturity and growth. But and that's just how the world works. Now, there are initially, so all the hair loss drugs that actually do work were discovered by mistake. So the first drug that was discovered was, now it's known commercially as Propecia, but the chemical compound is called finasteride. And finasteride now for Propecia is diagnosed in 1 milligram dosages, but it was initially diagnosed in 5 milligram dosages to treat something called BPH, benign prostate hyperplasia. So people who are getting older, who have an inflamed prostate, they take this medication and they can reduce the size of their prostate. And then one of the side effects that were noticed was that people were regrowing their hair. So doctors said, hey, let's lower the dosage to 1 milligram, call it Propecia, and repackage it. Merck is the company that originally came up with the product. Now, what finasteride does is it blocks alpha B reductase. It blocks that second enzyme that converts testosterone to DHT. What we've learned in clinical studies was that if you block alpha A reductase, not very much happens at all to your hair. You block alpha B reductase, a lot seems to happen with the hair. And then if you block both with another drug called dutasteride, there's balloons, I don't know where the balloons are coming from, but I think Riverside is approving. If you block both, if you block alpha B reductase, what we've noticed is a tremendous increase in hair regrowth or the stoppage of hair loss. Unfortunately, dutasteride is not FDA approved. It's a little more of an aggressive drug, and it stops alpha A reductase from creating DHT, which is DHT your brain needs and your body needs. What we've learned is, as far as we know, blocking the enzyme that does create the hair loss DHT seems to be something that a lot of us are fine living without. It's needed more for puberty, but for the most part, we're seeing that most people seem fine without it. And then there's side effects, which we can talk about. But when you block the enzymes that create DHT, you still have more free flow testosterone flooding through your third enzyme, which is estradiol. So when you block your DHT, when you block your alpha B reductase, what you end up doing is creating more estrogen because there's more free flow testosterone to be converted to estrogen. And this is why one of the side effects for taking finasteride is gynecomastia, is you're seeing like just guys' boobies just get bigger and they get fatter. So it's a very small subset, but it's a real thing. So anyways, that's the underlying mechanisms. And then that DHT flows to your scalp and it attacks your androgen receptors, and it doesn't necessarily cause your hair to fall out. What it does is it causes your hair to miniaturize and it reduces the growth phase, the anagen phase of your hair cycle. So for all the technical reasons, I know we got a little nerdy here, but at least we understand what's going on. And we've also come to learn that DHT is not the sole culprit. If you block all your DHT, you're not growing your hair back. It's not the sole culprit. It plays an active role in hair loss, but there's other stuff like proteins called PGD2, which are responsible for inflammation. And there's studies done that shown that people who are completely bald have a much higher degree of PGD2 in their scalp as opposed to your average person. Now, there are some people who have tons of testosterone and they have a full head of hair. So why is that? It's because their androgen receptors are not susceptible to DHT. So DHT doesn't attack the follicles. It's a bit of a shady area. We don't entirely understand the mechanisms, but we do have some idea of what works and what doesn't. And now So the first FDA-approved drug is Proscar, 5 milligrams finasteride to treat BPH, which works with hair loss. The second drug that's treated is from Johnson & Johnson, and it's called Minoxidil. And it's called Rogaine commercially. So the thing about Rogaine is, it's not, think of like your house is flooding and you're just buying bigger buckets. So what it does actually, it increases, and it's, so again, this drug as well, and it's applied topically, but this drug as well was initially discovered to treat something called hypertension. And another side effect is people saying, hey, I'm growing hair. And what we speculate happens, what we hypothesize as an educated guess happens, is when you apply Rogaine or Minoxidil to your scalp, what it does is increases the blood flow and it increases the potassium flow to your scalp. So we suspect that increased potassium flow, plus since the, I know this sounds weird, but since the DHT is moving at a faster pace, it's harder for it to bind to the follicle, and this is why you can reduce the DHT attacking the follicles, you have better hair growth. So these are the two FDA drugs, and honestly, these are the only two that works. Saw palmetto. So I know you mentioned biotin and you mentioned saw palmetto. I don't know if you mentioned saw palmetto. Saw palmetto is a natural drug. It's a natural compound. It's possible it does work, but the thing is, you don't know how much to take. You don't know what you're doing to your body. You really don't know anything. You know why? Because it's a natural compound, and you can't patent natural compounds. And when you can't patent natural compounds, there's no incentive to do FDA when anyone else can use the drug. So this is why, unfortunately, a lot of natural supplements could possibly work in theory to solve many problems, not just this problem. But the reason why we don't have good data, and data is absolutely crucial, is because there's no incentive to pour tens of billions of dollars into research, into something that you cannot take control over. Unfortunately, it's how the world works, and it's horrible that we're creating synthesized chemicals when we have natural chemicals that could possibly help. Now, the problem with saw palmetto does block alpha B reductase, that enzyme that creates DHT that causes hair loss. But people have taken it, and you really don't see results, and it's even really hard to gauge how these things work. So that's the really long conversation of the underlying mechanisms. And now, how the industry has been going on for such a long time is that, you know, you take finasteride, and it works, and you take Minoxidil and it works, and you do one last thing. You take an antifungal shampoo called ketoconazole. And those things work together really well. I think in America, the 1% ketoconazole is off the counter, and the 2% you need a prescription. Sorry, don't quote, I can check. But I know in Canada, it's commercially marketed as Nizoral. So Nizoral, America, and it works really, really.
You're saying, after explaining all these things, you're saying if based on all this research that you've done, you kind of boiling down to these three components, basically the finasteride, the minoxidil, and the keto something.
Non-surgical. There's non-surgicals. Non-surgical, and then we could talk about one more thing that's not FDA approved, but FDA cleared, which people tend to conflate, and they're really different. So there's FDA cleared low light laser therapy. So pretty much shining light at 679 nanometers with a wavelength of 679 nanometers shows to stimulate hair growth and other growth factors. But FDA approved. If you're not taking finasteride, everything else is really secondary, at the very least. And women can take finasteride, but women can take Rogaine. Now, yes, that's non-surgical. So your first line of attack, and I recommend you do things in isolation. So when you just take finasteride, and one of the biggest issues with people who take finasteride is some of them get off the drug right away because they start losing more hair, and they freak out. Yeah, like some people have incredible shedding and they freak out, and it's called, in technical terms and in medical terms, it's called telogen effluvium, shock loss, also known as shock loss. And the irony is that's the best result you want to have. So your hair goes through three phases, anagen, telogen, and catagen. Okay? When your hair is in telogen phase, it's sleeping, so that it can go back. And so catagen is when it's preparing for anagen. So we can keep out catagen, but let's talk about telogen and anagen. Telogen is your hair sleeps. So all over the hair on your head, I think about 20% or 10% of your hair is always constantly in sleeping phase. You can't tell it because it's constantly cycling, but your hair sleeps and it regrows. Now, when you take medication, what you're doing is you're altering the health of your hair. So your hair is midway through growth. It's a miniaturized follicle, and it's aware that it now has enough, let's just call it medication or strength to grow a much healthier hair, right? What does it do? It can't grow, it can't change the shaft diameter of your hair midway through growth. What it does is it falls out, goes to sleep for 3 months, and then it comes out much stronger. And that means that your medication, that you're a good responder to finasteride. So this is why doctors tell you, you really can't see. Oh, and I have to preface all of this, that I'm not a doctor. So speak to your doctor to get any information. Don't do any life-changing decisions. Obviously, you can't get these medications without speaking to your doctor, but I'm not a medical professional. I'm just a guy with a stupid opinion. So keep that in mind. So now, disclaimer, which should probably have happened 20 minutes earlier, but
we started, but it doesn't matter. We're here now.
yeah. So what were we talking about? Exactly. So when you take something that's working, you generally can go through an element of shock loss, some more than others, and some cannot experience any shock loss, but their body will be a pretty good responder anyways. It's a gradation, and it's really hard to tell. And what I like to recommend people is that you do things in isolation. Why? If you all of a sudden one day decide to go on, you know, Propecia, minoxidil, ketoconazole, everything, and dutasteride, topical, and oral minoxidil, which we can talk about, and you do all of this together, and then you're seeing good results, what happens now is you're locked into all of these results. You don't know which one is the one that's working, right? And what you want to do is do a minimally invasive process. You want to be slow and steady wins the race. Find something, try one thing, try it out for 3-4 months. You can probably notice if you're getting good results, you see a reduction of shedding, you see an increased growth, all that stuff is signs that something's working. Stay on it for a few months and then you can try something else and see how your body responds. Because think of it, anytime we do any of this stuff, until we have something much better that's down the road, you're taking this for life. You can't just take this for 2 months and get off it, right? Because your DHT is going to go back and attack your follicles. So yeah, I mean, that's roughly the process, and there's still a lot more to say, and we could talk about low light laser therapy. I don't know too much about it, but I have done some reading. To be honest, the low light laser therapy with specific diodes or specific products are FDA cleared, which means that it doesn't go through the rigorous process of clinical trials and whatnot. But I believe one thing it asserts is that it's not necessarily harmful, and that there's some marginal benefits or there's some way to quantify success, but it doesn't have anything, it's nothing like FDA approved. People do go through low light laser therapy. They buy the caps and stuff. It's really just very cheap lasers. It's really just, so you know, the light you see, any color you notice is because it's light reflecting into your eyes at a very specific wavelength. If you use 679 nanometers light, it seems to have benefits. People do other stuff like dermaneedling to stimulate cellular regrowth, so they'll damage the surface layer of their skin, which will cause growth factors to head to that area, and then plus absorption. And someone like Spencer Cobrin would actually talk, even though there's medical studies that show that like stuff like microneedling greatly increases absorption, people can sometimes argue against the research and say that it's got a flaw in it, it's got a bias in it for this and that reason. But for the most part, dermarolling is not a bad idea. Minoxidil, finasteride is really, and ketoconazole is like the three golden, you know, tips yes. And people who do this at a young age can really intervene in the process for life. And some people can have, most people will have a greatly decrease the progression of their hair loss over time, and it'll make them an ideal candidate for hair transplant surgery, which is a whole other conversation.
So we need to like put some like the list of the things in here, like you gotta pass it.
Yeah, sure.
I put on the description, and also I gotta make sure that I bought. I know that you said like don't mix and all that stuff, but I'm taking biotin, which is fine. I mean, hair and nails and skin, whatever. Fine.
But biotin is the same argument, right? It's the same argument as saw palmetto. We really don't have any proof it works. It helps a little bit, but you're not gonna reverse. So like you're gonna increase the health of your hair, sure, but you're not gonna be able to fight androgenetic alopecia. Someone who's a Norwood 6 with a completely bald head can take all the biotin in the world. It's not going to make a difference, in my opinion.
So, my reasoning behind taking these things is, okay, I think that, I know based on conversation with you and other people and information that I've researched that I've done, that it is very hard to get from bald to like let's grow hair.
Yes,
it's a lot easier to prevent losing hair. So as I'm
exactly
30 years old, I haven't, you know, I have good amount of hair. At least I'm doing these things as early, you know, as possible, as I decided to do this to maintain what I have, improve the quality of what I have, and then do other things that then it might be more complicated and things to be able to grow. But you know,
100%.
Taking a couple of stages at a time, right? And I really want to do the finasteride.
Correct. Okay. Finasteride.
You said that one is not something that you can just buy over the counter, right? You need to
definitely get a prescription not for that one. You need to get a prescription, yes.
So I need to.
Yes.
It is in my. Gotta make sure that I put it on top of my to-do list.
Yes, and for those listening, you can buy. So what's commercially available for hair loss is something called Propecia. They've just rebranded and upped the price. If you want to save a ton of money, you get the ProScar 5 milligrams, and you ask the doctor to prescribe this. You break up ProScar into 4, and you save orders of magnitude on your cost. Now, just one more quick point here. Your pharmacy, like this is above people who even do, like who are in the pharmaceutical industry. These are above even doctors. They'll always recommend the generic. If you go, I'll look online what Merck would cost. I would probably tell you it might cost 20 to 30 times more for the name brand. So Merck's patent on finasteride expired. So now any company can make their own generic product. Now, in a drug, there's something called a pharmacophore and an oxycophore. One is, and it's pretty much how you break down the construct. So one of them is responsible for the active ingredient, the molecular structure that is finasteride, and the delivery structures. And then one of them is just, and the other one is just all the additional information that's not necessarily crucial. So in order to create a drug that's considered generic, there's a list of criteria that you have to meet. However, it's a very intricate process in terms of exactly, you can even absorb the molecule, but that molecule might not enter into the stream it needs to go into. It might not go through the processes it needs to get to finally get to your scalp and avoid the hair loss process. So people who even, and it's anecdotal. Anecdotal just means that it's more of just a person's account rather than scientific evidence. But there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that people who switch, because they go, oh, I've been taking Merck, but now I can get the generic. They switch to the generic, and then they notice their hair loss starts coming back really aggressively. But they're still both taking finasteride. This is why people will rather pay $80 to $100 for 15 days worth or 30 days worth of medication rather than pay literally $2 or $3 for the generic drug. There's a reason for it. So that's just some information for you to equip yourself with, especially if you're already taking the name brand. But yeah, people will recommend that their doctor puts in so they can tell their pharmacist, I don't want the generic, I want the name brand. If you live in Canada, it's much, much cheaper. If you live in America, it's a little more expensive. However, if you have a job and you know it's not going to hit the bank too much, and it's your hair, it's your looks, it's your confidence. So for some people, they're willing to pay way more. And you know, everyone makes their own decisions based on what they can afford and where their priorities are. But yeah, I just wanted to plant that piece of information there. Yeah, so
you're basically were telling me that, like, you know, I bought the generic brand from Minoxidil. You know, I got the
Kirkland
because I saw it. I saw some
reviews. Yeah, but that generic brand has not, that specific compound has not gone through FDA trials. So the data you're looking at in an FDA trial is not the data that results from taking that specific liquid. You have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I know.
That's why
you told me. Told me that, and that's why it's a great clarification. And I mean, I already bought it. I want to use it. Whatever. I spilled quite a good amount of my first bottle because of I'm like putting it on and I have it in my hand and then I'm like doing this and like I was like well maybe this
it gets a little greasy. It gets a little greasy too, but so now let's make this conversation a little more interesting. This is what's FDA approved. However, and the industry of what works and what ethical doctors recommend has started to shift a little bit. So unfortunately, a lot of people recommend a lot of junk. None of it works. You watch something on Instagram, how to cure baldness. If that was the case, you wouldn't be hearing about it on Instagram in a reel or in a paid ad. You'd have top celebrities using it. You'd see people who are completely bald to regrow their hair. It's all a bunch of garbage. There's a very few things that work, and these are them. And everyone else will promise you the world. However, we're finding different ways to deliver the medication that does work. So finasteride itself is a pretty big molecule, and getting it to absorb topically is a little more difficult. But what's FDA approved is oral finasteride and topical minoxidil. And now you're seeing a flip. So people are doing both. So people are doing oral minoxidil and topical finasteride. In fact, I was looking online and I've seen doctors starting to recommend topical dutasteride. So what we spoke about earlier now it's good to understand at least the mechanisms, because when I talk about different medications, you can actually start to see a dissociation of why one is better than the other. Dutasteride was the medication I told you that blocked both enzymes that produce DHT that attacks your hair follicles. And what we've noticed is when you tackle both, you see tremendous differences in hair loss. Unfortunately, it's just not commonly used because there are the side effects are serious and they're important. However, for whatever reason, using it topically seems to be a little, you know, you're directly applying it to the site of that needs action or whatever. So people are now prescribing topical dutasteride as well, which is incredible. So, but you know, in terms of what doctors seem to be comfortable with prescribing now is oral finasteride. No, but why I'm telling you this, Fu, is because when you put on minoxidil, it's kind of gross. It makes your hair shiny. Does it feel weird when you put it on your hair? Twice a day?
I mean, it's oil in my hair. I mean, it's less in the, and then especially like if it gets to my hair and all that. It's
tastes funky.
It's not good.
So the thing about taking oral minoxidil is that it'll increase your hair growth everywhere in your body. But at the same time, it can help with your beard. It can help with the hair on your head. So definitely something to consider. Now, if you want to get, we can talk about the world of hair transplantation. So
that one, do you know, I think we should do another podcast after that.
You have still questions. Go through them.
I'm trying to like digest all this. I'm thinking together we're gonna get it. We're gonna define these terms, spell them, get some links and things.
No problem.
I know that I have to let me watch this again. Let me study this because it's so much that.
Yeah.
I've talked to you about this before. So this is not even the first time I'm hearing it. And it's still, it's just one of those that it's like, okay, I got some awareness now. I understand all these terms. It's like, okay, like trying to keep up with them. Like, I don't remember half of them. It's tough. So
it's a little scientific and jargony. Yeah. But the transplant part is honestly the most stable solution, but there's a lot of risks and whatnot, which we can discuss at another time. But your hair looks great, man. You look amazing. You look young. You look healthy. And I think that's a part of that proactive mentality. And there certainly is a stigma where guys are scared to talk about hair loss. Who cares? Right. And you never know when it creeps up on you. You see people who are like 40 full head of hair. You see them 41 and you're like, what happened to you?
That's why, like, I turned 30 and I went through, like, I know it's just a number, but I just, it hit me like a train. It was like, okay, I'm 30. I I broke up with my relationship because I was like, look, this is not the long-term thing that I want. I started working on my save heavily. I started like, okay, like, let me start planning for hair loss. I eat different. Like, I do so many things.
Good for you.
It's like, it kind of hit me. And I know it's just a number, but it was just like, you know, I got to the third floor, people would say, right? And I'm like, I've been working on myself for since I started.
Good for you.
Especially, I mean, all my life, but since I started the entrepreneurial journey, that's when like the self-development is almost forced.
And presentation is important.
Right? It's extremely important. And then that's one thing that, you know, Ryan Pineda says and lives, and is an embodiment of it. He had no hair. Let's just focus in on the facial hair.
And the beard.
One of the biggest, the beard. And then he started growing it, and he has a beard. Like, I mean, he grew a beard from nothing to now he has a beard, a decent beard.
And he just took biotin? And Moxil? I'm calling bullshit.
He tried other things too. So he might have said that he is pointing it out to that, but maybe it's a delayed reaction from other things that he did because he tried a bunch of things. So I don't know.
Does he take minoxidil orally? Does he take something? Yeah, because
He said topical minoxidil or biotin orally. And
good for him. I mean, that's not something that's commonly heard at all. So yeah, that's interesting.
I don't know if there's other things too, right, that are influencing that. But, so for me, I just saw that, and then commanding more respect. I've dreamed to have a beard all my life. I was like, look, can I do that so I can command more respect? Can I also, at the same time, like, okay, let me prevent my hair loss and deal with that. Like, so that's it. I just want to look.
But looking at you right now, all right, I don't know if that, I'm guessing now that you're telling me all this, that that's the natural state of your beard when it grows out. It looks like you have a big beard, you have a thick beard, and you just decided to just cut it, shave everything else, and grow the goatee. So, you know, in my, you know, we tend to, like, the things that we can feel insecure about, we think, it's called the spotlight effect. We think that everyone else is the first thing people notice about us. When I look at you, the last thing that goes through my mind, and it's almost self-fulfilling when you tell me about it, and now I look at it, but it's the last thing on my mind to think that you don't have a commanding presence because you don't have a fully grown beard. So one part of this aspect is you should be confident and do whatever you need to feel confident. At the same time, you should realize, I know, you have that energy. I'm speaking to the people listening too. Yeah, the people listening. Because everyone relates.
Talking about this, look, I got my neck like thing wrong. Oh my God, scrap this.
No, I didn't even notice that either. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at that goatee. It's just everything else is secondary. So yeah, I know, man, but I love that you're actually doing something about it, and I love that you're so confident that you're willing to put it on camera and you're willing to go on Instagram and put it on Reels, because definitely I think it's something that, you know, women have so much at their disposal. They can put on makeup, they can do a whole bunch of stuff, they can completely change their looks. Guys, we can grow our beard, we can cut our hair, and that's pretty much as far as it goes, and we can try some new clothing, but you know, we want to shift it up. We can get a new pair of glasses or whatnot. But yeah, growing a beard is, to some people, it's important. And
I want to add something too, is that I also, like, I'm a strategic marketer, right? Like, that's what I do. And I thought about it. You know what? Like, I'm just going to document my journey because I know this is something that a lot of people will relate to. I want to do it anyway. So might as well just put a little bit of effort of recording it, get people through the journey. I've got a lot of people that be like, hey, if it works for you, I'm trying it. So they already tracking me, seeing me doing this thing. So once I figure it out, I got a bunch of people that are going to be following my journey. And this is such a, you know, a great thing, because it not only helps me connect and expose and give people that look, they don't even have to try it. I'm doing it. I'm trying it. They're living it almost through me. But also, it opens conversations and gets people to get to know me. And now, if somebody wants help with the marketing and wants help with anything else that I'm big into, like self-development in general, and they want to join me, be part of my community of things, then this is a great way to get into these people. So that's how I think. So I want to
vocalize those
thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the way I see it is you're a giver. You give quality, you give value, and that's your precursor to building good relationships and establishing trust. And I think that's brilliant. And it's why I love having you in my ecosystem. It's been nothing but a pleasure. But yeah, you know, I'm happy to even, you know, I know this was a little more of a formal conversation, talking about the underlying mechanisms and a little bit of the science behind hair loss. But it's a good conversation.
When we have more conversations, because we're going to keep talking about this, then we can just say people, hey, if you want to get into like the nitty gritty, nerdy stuff of
right.
like the hair loss, go watch this episode, right? And now right. this episode is recorded already. So I think this is a great episode
yeah.
to record.
And one more thing to before we wrap up here is anecdotally, but one of the things that seemed to have a tremendous effect on your hair is low glycemic index. Eating, you said you eat healthy. I myself do two things. I don't eat processed sugar. I've cut that out for nearly a year. And I fast between 17 to 19 hours a day. So I do something called intermittent fasting. I start off doing 14 hours. Oh, really? I start off doing 14 hours and now I'm even sometimes dabbling with 20, but I definitely don't go lower than 17 hours. And
never like
putting yourself in starvation mode is one of the key tenets. What's his name? David Sinclair. Oh, no, I have like a religious rule. It's a religion of mine. It's like I do not break my fast ever. And yeah, it's almost like I've come to learn I'm addicted to mental pain. So I love running. It's why I love fasting. I love like my brain tells me.
I just want to put my two cents on this. The reasoning behind the fasting, obviously, it helps me because when I eat a lot. Healthy, but I eat a lot. And also sometimes I don't feel bad not eating healthy because I eat healthy most of the time. And that's why I'm in a decent shape. And then one of the biggest reasons is for efficiency. I only eat two times a day, sometimes just once, but like mainly two times a day. So I cut one time that I don't have to cook, clean, all that stuff. So like I work harder. So when I'm fasting, it's because I'm working. And it's not until I get the hunger pain gets bad enough to get me out of my ass and like, okay, let me start working. I need to eat. But I've learned to like, I'm busy. Like, I don't feel it. I'm not like super hungry. So then that's when like 18 hours go by and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Let me go eat now. And it feels efficient for me. That's so it's
interesting.
But efficiency is a play for me too.
Right. For me, it's like I have discipline in so many other aspects of my life. And getting control over my eating habits was just a failed process over and over. And like now that I have complete control over my eating habits, my brain processes food so differently. It took me like 4 months of fasting for it to kick in, where it's like I get those endorphins and I get that stimulation. Even when I'm the farthest point into my fast, between 14 to 17 hours in, I honestly feel so good. And the worst, I feel the worst in my day right after I eat. And I get full so quickly.
Dude, yeah. I crash so hard. That's why I love working while I'm fasting,
right.
working out, doing all. And then I eat, and then I just want to sleep. So then I've been
right.
battling that. Let me see if I have it here. And so I got like this like Unicity, like Unimate or Matcha or something. Because if not, I just crash. So then I got
right.
that like food coma. And it's like, oh my God, like, I just got a nap.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just take something. So I get it.
Right. So yeah, you know, and to tie this back to the hair stuff, undoubtedly my hair feels so much healthier now that I don't eat sugar and I fast. And there's a ton of stuff online where people promise by reducing inflammation, the low glycemic index diet specifically. It's a diet produced. It's a Harvard-based diet. It's called the low glycemic index, where they rate foods. But pretty much anything that causes inflammation, sugars and whatnot, should be avoided. And people who do that for an extended period of time, who can make that a natural part of their life, increase. And plus, if you're on finasteride, like those two things can work together powerfully. And this is a little bit of anecdotal. This isn't backed by trials and whatnot, but when anecdotal becomes powerful, when you have a lot of people promising by it, not just one guy on an Instagram ad. But yeah,
yeah,
cool,
exactly.
man.
Yeah. Hey, man, this has been a great conversation. One of those.
Pleasure is mine.
It's to study this. Like, you gotta, like, study
yeah.
this. And it's great that I love having people that know a lot about any topic that I'm interested in, and I'm definitely interested in this. So thank you for providing me this.
It's my pleasure. It's my absolute pleasure. You've given me so much too, James. You've given me so much too. So it's honestly the least I can do.
And I mean, and we're gonna keep giving each other value for a long time. Clearly, I mean, we're being like, it's been like 2 years now or so, and it's not
2 years. It's been like 4 years, no. 5 years. I'm insulted that you don't even know how long we've been friends. No, it's not 2 years, James.
It is.
No, it's not.
Because we have a good relationship. Because I started my journey, I've been full time doing entrepreneurship just 3 years.
We met more than 2 years ago. I can check the first date, but we might have increased our collaboration. We might have increased our communication for 2 years, but yeah. But anyways, yeah. You know, it's been a while. Let's just keep it at that.
It's been a couple of years, and it's been good. So yeah, man, I can't wait to record more content with you, get more to this, and then ask
you. Yeah, jump on a call.
Hopefully we can see some changes in my hair.
Yeah. I want to see you look like a caveman the next time we talk. It's just the long hair, the beard.
Let me see if I can get some hair in here. I get some like little bald spots that are getting better. But also it's because less anxiety. I have less anxiety. I'm eating better.
Right.
Because I get anxiety and I
just take photos. Do you take photos? Because it's much easier to notice progress.
Look at my Instagram.
Take video.
Look at my Instagram.
Right.
See all that there. So everything's
good for you.
There.
Good
so,
for you. Good for you.
Know, that's why I put it. I document all this stuff. Because it's like, look, let me throw it in. If you look, I was looking at my interview. It was almost a year ago exactly, a little bit over, with Sean Cannell from Think Media. I interviewed him for my podcast, and I was looking, and I had like some bald spots and stuff, and I remember like having like some anxiety and things like that. So like I was like, damn, like I don't have that anymore. Cool, right? Like, and I looking at my eyebrows and things, so. It's been a lot of like anxiety too, and food and all that. So there's so many different components to this, but you know,
good stuff.
I'm gonna keep documenting everything. Look, I literally go live while I cook. I'm doing like as much documentation of my journey. So just Instagram is my main social media. So follow me on Instagram if you wanna keep track with my stuff. And your main social media, main stuff. Where can people?
I'm pretty active on Facebook and LinkedIn, but everything is Mikey Perez, M I K E Y P E R E S. I'm active on Instagram as well. Let me grab. It's just that's pretty much what I'm active on.
Okay, perfect. So man. I'll have the links in the description and all that. We'll get together so we can. This description has to be a little bit more powerful than the usual ones because we gotta put the disclaimer. We gotta put the explanations. I wanna put some links and stuff because this is one of those that I know that I'm gonna refer to myself plus send people to this and I know it's gonna be cemented as like, okay, we recorded this. Then what's got happened 3 months, 6 months, you know, like we're going to keep recording this. I'm excited for this journey.
Great. I'm excited to follow up and be a part of it.
Perfect. So this was Mikey and Fu. This is us signing off. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Moments with Fu with your host, Fu. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advisement on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we will see you on the next episode.